Welcome to another episode of On the Issues with Alon Ben-Mir. Today's guest is Lamar Zalagran, an Afghan activist and founder of the nonprofit organization Empowering Afghan Women, which provides online courses for high school girls in Afghanistan. She is currently a student at Berea College in Kentucky, continuing her educational journey from the American University of Afghanistan after escaping the country in 2022. In this episode, Alon and Lamar discuss her firsthand experience of the Taliban's takeover in August 2021, the status of women and young Afghans currently under Taliban rule, and what role the international community can play in alleviating the terrible human rights situation in the country.
So I wanted to, you know, I know you've been activist, and can you just tell the audience your firsthand experience, what happened actually since the Taliban took over? Well, after the United States withdrew so abruptly from Afghanistan and they basically left behind what I would characterize and all saying a trail of tears in Afghanistan.
So I was in Kabul in August of 2022. August of 2022 when the Taliban took over the Kabul and the whole country. First of all, it was almost unexpected for us because we didn't expect this type of invasion or occupation ever, because we thought that they might not take the Kabul overnight. And there was a rumor that they started to take over all over the provinces of Afghanistan. I was in Kabul. I was in the middle of the street when this thing happened in 2021, I guess up to 2021. I was in the middle of the street, and I noticed that everyone is rushing and cars were driving extremely fast. I asked a man in the street what had happened, and he said to me that Taliban is coming and they're in the city border. For a moment, I was shocked. My eyes were full of tears. I didn't know what things are happening and why everyone is rushing. And at that time, I couldn't even believe that they still occupied the whole country. And I was in the middle of the street and no one was even there to pick up us and take us to the home. There was no public transportation because everyone was trying to reach out themselves to a safe place, to a place where they can secure themselves, because everybody was concerned, like, if the Taliban is coming to the city, of course they will do some suicide bomb attacks, of course they will kill the people. And it's the same thing that happened after they took over the Kabul. So basically, after the 2 days of the Taliban, at the first days, because I was a member of American University of Afghanistan, I was a student. It was my sophomore year when the Taliban took over. In the first days of the Taliban occupation, we received the news from the American University of Afghanistan that they left the campus in Afghanistan, and they have almost left the whole campus in Afghanistan, and they no longer work in Afghanistan. I was in a complete state of shock. My friends told me that there's a lady who's evacuating some of the American University students to somewhere secure, like out of the country. And then my friend told me if I'm interested to send my passports, to send my national ID card. So after that, I sent all my documents to that lady. And she said that we need to wait actually for the next 40 hours until she would give us a good news if she's evacuating us or not. So basically, after I come home from that chaos, after seeing this whole, like, the whole situation of the country, everyone was rushing, woman was rushing, and I was 1 hour far away from the I was in a market, and I was like 1 hour far away from my home. I walked almost like 1 hour to reach from market to my home, and after I arrived at home, my parents were really sad. Everyone was sad, like my parents, my mother were literally crying because my father was a part of government. My father used to work in the government, and my brother also worked in the government. My mother was a school teacher. So I belong to a very, like, highly educated family. My parents are highly educated. My mother is a graduate from Nebraska University, which is in Omaha, Nebraska. And my mother has been, like, serving for the country all of her life. For 20 years, she has been a teacher. So after that, because this evacuation, I didn't receive any news from this evacuation. I stayed in the country for a year, and it was really, really hard for me to live there. Almost when 1 year ended, I couldn't believe that I just remained in Afghanistan for a year, because I thought I would just move out of the country in 1 month or 2 months. And I have done a lot of evacuation attempts, and all of them haven't failed. So basically, every day we greeted with the new rules and new anti-woman policies. At the first days, they imposed a forced hijab on us. Basically, I didn't expect like any forced hijab, because I didn't have any experience of hijabs, like hijabs or abaya or whatever, which is commonly happening in the Middle East. We don't have that much experience, because before the Taliban occupation, I was normally wearing jeans, makeup, and I was going to school, because I graduated from a common high school in Afghanistan, and I was a member of the American University of Afghanistan. And beside of that, we had the right to vote. We had the right to become involved in the politics. We had the rights to become a sport woman, or kind of like to join baseball, basketball. We had the best teachers. We had the best lawyers. We had the best, not like, I wouldn't say we had some like politician as well, which was a kind of like corrupted, but they still represented us in the politics. We had the ministry called Ministry of Foreign Affairs. When the Taliban came, they replaced that ministry to the Ministry of Virtue and Presidency. And after that, I faced many obstacles. I faced many security obstacles, because after the Taliban came to the power, I burned all my ID certificates and documents, because any tie with the West and with the United States can be really dangerous for me and my family members as well. And they was house to house checking as well, because every week they did some house to house checking. They come to the houses, and they have done some inspection. So after the Taliban come, I wasn't at home like fully. I wasn't at home 24/7, because I was trying to hide myself in somewhere, not in my house, because everyone in our neighborhood, they knew that I belonged to the American University of Afghanistan, which wasn't safe for me.
So you said you stayed a full year after the Taliban came back to power. So what did you do during this whole year?
For the whole year, I was doing my online education, because when the Taliban came, the American University of Afghanistan turned their in-person classes to online classes. So I was doing online classes, and before that, I started my nonprofit organization, which was basically based in Kabul. So I went to the high school campuses and providing them educational classes, workshops, stationery donations, and some pad donation. But after the Taliban came, I turned this to online. I turned these in-person classes, like my in-person nonprofit work, to shifting to online work. And I used to provide like same educational classes and workshops. And I did some online campaign as well for Afghan women. Of course, I did everything online. We didn't do anything in person or going to the public places and chanting for women, because we couldn't do that and it wasn't safe for us. So basically at that time, I used to write like letters to BBC World News. I used to speak on media every day. Every day I spoke with BBC World News, Los Angeles Times. Even I remember once I invited a journalist in my home, and my parents were really frustrated with my action, especially my brother, because he was really scared. He told me that Taliban might come and they might kill us because of my action, because I invited a journalist, which wasn't safe for whole of family members. But during that time, it was really difficult for me to stay in the silent, because at that time, for me, silent wasn't the option. So every day I sent a letter to BBC World News, spoke on international media every day. I kept giving online classes for high school girls. And I then, like after some few months, the BBC World News organized a podcast for me to speak with Hillary Clinton on BBC World News podcast, Women and Peace Building. So somehow I realized that my voice actually reached to a global audience. And then I became a columnist for the Spiegel newspaper. And what basically I have done was every day I wrote letters from Kabul to Berlin. At the meantime, after 2 months or after 3 months of living in Afghanistan after the Taliban occupation, the evacuation American evacuation team evacuated us to the city of Mazar, where I spoke with Hillary Clinton. So I used to live in a safe house with restricted movement. In that safe house, we didn't have anything. Like The American evacuation team provided us food, provided us everything, and we couldn't go outside. Like, we couldn't go outside, especially in the city of Mazar, because I was living in Kabul. So I traveled from Kabul to Mazar. And at that time, I received the news from the BBC World News to speak with Hillary Clinton. I spoke on that podcast with Hillary Clinton and requested her to take action for Afghan women and keep an eye on the Taliban human and women's rights violation. Yeah, of course, like, it was really difficult to speak with the media and send letters and doing all these work, and I used an anonymous name. I didn't use my full name or any pictures, kind of like that. And after that, the Taliban started to arrest people from the US camps. So basically, after that, they started to arrest people from the US camps, those who live in the US camps. And we were living in a separate safe house, so they couldn't reach out to us, and we skipped that safe house in overnight, and I didn't come to the safe house in Kabul. And after that, the Spiegel newspaper requested me to send them columns. So on those columns, every day I described my life at the Taliban. How do I live in a safe house? I wrote different topics about the society, about the women's right, about the Me Too movement, about the child labor, about the child smuggling. So whenever I went outside the house, I actually analyzed everything around me. I analyzed what Taliban are doing, what women are doing. And after I come back to the home, after like few hours or after 1 or 2 minutes, I wrote everything down on my laptop, and then I completed all my daily diaries. So basically, I wrote daily diaries for them. So in a weekly basis, I sent them like one letter from Kabul to Berlin, and they translated. Of course, these letters were in English, and they translated these letters from English to German language. Almost for the Spiegel newspaper, I wrote like 20 columns. But then after I got out of the Afghanistan, after I skipped Afghanistan, they revealed my identity with my full name and picture. And they also described how did I escape from Afghanistan. So I described that in a column at the last columns of the Spiegel newspaper. And also BBC news journalists announced my name with my full picture and the name that I am the girl who spoke with Hillary Clinton.
So I've entered two questions for you.
Yes.
So you've been using the internet, and how is it that the Taliban, I mean, they could have basically control, they can control the internet and stop enabling you to use the internet for your purposes. So that did not happen. And the second thing, how did you manage to eventually escape from Afghanistan? Deal with the first issue first.
So, actually, in Afghanistan at this time, internet is not safe because these Taliban, they're using, as far as I heard, they use some of Chinese intelligence to monitor social media, to monitor like WhatsApp, emails, as far as I heard, and as far as like what media tell us, especially if you go to the Twitter, especially on social media. When the Taliban come, I removed all my achievements on social media. I erased all my bios on the social media, and even on the social media, I use some kind of like fake names, especially on Twitter, because on the social media website, they have kind of like their representative or their members actively working on the social media, especially their spokesperson. But usually using like some of the social medias or using internet is not safe in Afghanistan. Back to home, as far as I remember, usually whenever I did like an email, or kind of like whenever I emailed someone to somebody, I deleted the email immediately. And I use some of like password authentication or some kind of like media or to some kind of like apps to secure the apps that I'm using, because nowadays there's an app, it's called YouMobile, which I'm currently using as well to save from the hacking, to save from the other kind of like web attacks. And it's still like, while I was in Afghanistan, we didn't use from WhatsApp because WhatsApp was really easy to monitor. So we basically used from Telegram, or and it was there was an application, it's called Signal, which we use from these two kind of application. And I use my emails, and I use from some security apps to secure the apps that I'm using. But overall, in Afghanistan, it's not safe to use from these internet, because they are monitoring that. Even if you do a comment, like social media comment, if you speak against the Taliban, or if you do a negative comment on Twitter or on social media against the Taliban, they definitely reach out to those people and they arrest them. They actually take them to the prison and they torture them. So basically these things are happening. But in Afghanistan, for those people who doesn't have any knowledge about the social media or about the internet, it might be really difficult for them to secure their internet application. But as far as, because I was a member of American University and they used to give us some digital media or cybersecurity attacks workshops and classes, so I was familiar on how to measure the safety and how to secure all my social media apps and application. And coming up about my escape from the Afghanistan, at first, like, it wasn't easy to skip Afghanistan for me as a woman, because it was kind of a very difficult journey. There was a lot of obstacles for me to skip the country, to travel inside the country, and also to travel outside the country. Because for women nowadays, there is travel restriction. Women cannot travel inside the country without a male guardian. So basically, a male guardian can be a male relative member from the family. A male relative member can be a husband, a father, a grandfather, and an uncle. So in August of 2022, I received my visa from the country of Qatar to go to a scholarship from American University of Afghanistan. When I arrived in the airport, the Taliban stopped us with ET gate from the American University. They took us to the terminal. They stopped us. We finish all the procedures, exit visa, enter visa, and even it still exists in my passport, the exit visa or the enter visa that they canceled on my passport, it still exists in my passport. So basically, they took our passport, they took our visas, and there was a negotiation between Taliban and the Qatari representative. So we were locked in the airport for 7 hours. After 7 hours of negotiation, they let us. They gave us back our bags. They sent us home. They insulted us. They were telling a lot of like negative stuff about our families. So we were kind of like convincing them that we are going to an educational journey to Qatar. But they told us, no, you're going to United States. If you go, if you ended up in the United States, you're gonna like end up marrying a American husband, kind of like that. And after that, I decided to travel from, I traveled from Afghanistan to the Pakistan border. I decided to travel alone from Afghanistan to the Pakistan border because traveling from the airport, it was impossible. After I traveled from Afghanistan to the Pakistan border.
So how did you go from Afghanistan to Pakistan? By car? How did you go?
We went by car because flying wasn't an option, and our passports were already blocked in the airport.
And
So,
there were no borders, I mean, guards in the border between the two countries?
Of course, there's police borders, there's Taliban members in the borders as well. So we started our trip in the midnight. I traveled, it was almost like four or 6 hours that took me to travel from Kabul to the Pakistan border. When I arrived in the Pakistan border, basically we were 6 girls from the American University of Afghanistan. And for 2 each girls, we had 1 male guardian. So basically it was my father. My father told the Taliban that on the other side of border, there's my son who would pick up my daughter. So after that, they got a convince. So it took us like a while to convince them that I'm not going alone. There's another family member who's going to pick up me from the other side of border. And then I successfully passed the border. After 4 or 3 hours, I arrived at the capital of Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, Islamabad. And after 2 days, I got my flight tickets and I traveled to Qatar.
Yeah, I mean, this is a heroic experience as far as you're concerned. Really, it's amazing. You know, let's talk a little bit about what's going on now. Obviously, there's sanctions being imposed on Afghanistan because of their treatment of women and girls. And one phenomenon which is very interesting is that, you tell me if it's still correct, that they still allow women to attend university, but not allowing them to go to high school. Now, what is that still the case?
It's not actually the same case. They don't allow women to go to the colleges and universities. For a while, when they come up to the power, they allowed girls for a while to go to the university. At first, they they announced a decree. Their decree told a woman if they want to go to the colleges or university, they need to follow the hijab rules, which are basically the hijab rules. It says that they cannot wear bright color hijabs, like they must wear black hijabs, black abaya, to cover themselves fully. And a woman of Afghanistan, because the majority of women are not, they're not kind of used to these hijab rules. But after that, like after a few months, they announced another decree that women cannot go to the colleges and universities. So currently, women cannot go to the colleges, universities. There's no higher education possibilities for women to go for further studies, to travel abroad. Even like schools are closed, so there's no educational opportunities for women now.
So, you know, but interestingly, 20 years of American control, or call it occupation, whatever the case, obviously at least every woman from, I would say, until the age of 30, that is when American came in, these girls were, say, 9, 10 years old, and after 20 years, they reached the age of 30. So if you think in those terms, 30, every single woman in Afghanistan at the age of between 25 and 30 have not been exactly what you said, used to wearing a hijab. They felt they were free. Even when they were little kids, they were not as under that this kind of control. And so obviously it was a very tiring, very difficult experience. So having not experienced anything like this, so just I'm thinking in terms of percentage when you have these many women up to the age of 28, 29, or even 30, they represent, based on what I'm looking at the statistic, nearly 20, 30, 20, 32%, 30, 40, 35% of women in Afghanistan. And they were not used to wearing hijab until the Taliban came over. So this is a massive transformation. So other than your experience, how other women been trying to deal with this terrifying phenomenon?
Yes, dealing with this kind of stuff is almost difficult for a woman to deal with new rules and new transformation, because there was a biggest change when the Taliban came into the power. So it was a lot of changes for us, because my mother usually, like after the new Republican government come into the power, so it was a new transform of change for her as well. And my mother also experienced the antis of the Taliban, and she was always telling us about the all these stories of the 90s. And I couldn't like even believe that one day I would experience the same thing, because I wasn't born there at that time, or during that period of the 90s of the Taliban, because I was born after 9/11. So basically it was kind of hard for me and for other women, and still other women, they still experience that, because they need to wear full hijab. It's not just about the hijab. They don't have access to education, they don't have access to employment, because some women are the breadwinners of their families. They have no freedom of speech, expression, they have no free identity, they have no opinion, they cannot even share their opinion about the politics or about the government system of the Taliban. So women doesn't even exist nowadays in Afghanistan. They completely forced to disappear from the society. So every day they are kind of like, because when I was there's no hope for them, there's no emotion for them. They have lost their hopes, their dreams got shattered. Because one day I was in the same situation, my dreams got shattered, I lost my hopes, I had no emotions, I had to stay all day at home doing nothing. And the only thing that nowadays we can help one woman in Afghanistan is through online education. Online education might be the first solution for them.
Yeah. Tell me, your parents are still in Afghanistan now?
Actually, after I escaped from Afghanistan, my family also escaped from Afghanistan. So they're not in Afghanistan, they're currently in Middle East.
Now, you know, there's a growing pressure on the Taliban now to change their approach, specifically when it comes to women. And so far, it hasn't really worked. But there's some people that I read about that they've been saying that. That are not did not really lose hope, that they still, that is, given the ongoing pressure on the Taliban, and the sanctions have been imposed on the government, that the Taliban at one point might relent and would agree that the women go back to school, elementary, including as well as universities. So there is that kind of talk. There is still a possibility as such. Do you feel that there's such a possibility? And if not, what do you, from your perspective, what's going to take? What is the international community? Awareness obviously is necessary. That is, everybody who's concerned about human rights ought to be talking about this issue. So, making more people aware of what's going on in Afghanistan is extremely important. But in terms of government pressure, so far it has really not worked. But then, like I said earlier, there's some say it might work. That is depending on to what extent this pressure continues. So, from your perspective, what would it take to force the Taliban to change their approach in how they treat women?
International community, I guess, like the West or the United States, they need to bring the Taliban on the table. And they had this issue before that because there was a Doha negotiation, but that negotiation didn't work in the right way because they bring the wrong people on the table. And it wasn't the people who represented the youth in Afghanistan, the women in Afghanistan, and the overall people of Afghanistan. So they were there to just experience some kind of like luxurious life in Doha. And it wasn't, so because of like those negotiations, because of bringing those wrong people in the table, today we experience this situation. Today we are separated from our parents, from our family, from our country, and we have experienced such a horrible experience in Afghanistan as a woman after the Taliban come into the power. And 10 women suffer from these policies. It's not just women. There's also human rights violation. People are still in Afghanistan, they have no bread to eat. People still suffer from hunger. There's no employment opportunities for youth. There's no education opportunities or resources for youth and women. And there's no human rights rules and values for the people of Afghanistan, especially like the Taliban. They do not consider human rights at all, because they believe that human rights and women rights is a part of like Western ideology and they shouldn't follow that. And for the West and for the United States, these types of sanctions doesn't affect the Taliban. It directly affects the people of Afghanistan because there's no humanitarian aid. There might be limited humanitarian aid for the people of Afghanistan. And one thing that I need to mention, that even if the woman go to the school, if the woman continue going, like if there would be a possibility, like 1% or 2% possibility that the woman can continue go to the school, they will accept to go to the school. Even there would be a follow, even there would be hijab rule, they would definitely follow the hijab rule and accept education opportunities for just the hijab rule. But the problem is, I cannot see any hope with the Taliban because they will not follow any human rights rule or women's rights rule. They wouldn't respect the individual choice or individual right of people. And I cannot see any hope with the Taliban because they are the same Taliban of 90s. Today, the things that they are doing now with the Afghan people, with the Afghan women, with the Afghan youth, they used to do the same thing in the 90s. So having had the experience of 90s and having had the experience of 2021 and 2022 and so far, there's no hope, there's no possibility of hope, and there's no possibility of further reformation, further improvement of the politics of the Taliban, because they are not going to follow those rules. They are not going to give the people to, they are not going to respect these individual rights and choice. They are not, they are actually the same Taliban of the 90s. But there's every possibilities of growing up there's every possibility that they will just growing up the tourism activities in Afghanistan, because they still like, they might use these school places or these educational places to grow up more children, to expose them with tourist activities, to give them some of these tourist teaching beatles, tourist trainings, because they do the same thing in Pakistan. And there's even possibility that they will train so many of these children, so many of these like young women to go and do babalos in Afghanistan or in other countries, or send them to abroad, because we cannot believe in these types of dictatorship regime. There's anything can happen by them.
Mm-hmm. Tell me that obviously there is a resentment of, against the United States, being that the United States occupied Afghanistan for 20 years. There is a massive difference, of course, in terms of culture, and the Taliban will not relate as well to the Americans, a quote unquote negotiator. From your knowledge, to what extent, for example, Saudi Arabia, who also follow Sharia laws, but perhaps not as stringent as the Taliban do, has the Saudis been prompted or have taken themselves the initiative to try to do something with Afghanistan, with the Taliban?
I think even in Saudi Arabia, women have the right of drive or go to the educational places, continue their education. So Afghanistan, at the time being, it's the first country who doesn't allow women to go to the schools and university.
Yeah, I understand that. But in terms of, you see, in Saudi Arabia, there's some reform. Since MBS came out, they start to drive. They can go out by themselves. They certainly cannot go to have an education. They want higher education. But they still, Saudi Arabia, follow Sharia laws. You know, there's no different than the Taliban, but there's strict interpretation of the Sharia laws. What I'm saying is, do you know if the Saudis have been urged by maybe other power like the United States, since the Taliban are not listening and they're not really reacting even to this sanctions that have been imposed on the Taliban? Has the Saudis or any other Arab countries been trying to mitigate this problem with the Taliban, to your knowledge?
I haven't seen any mediation from the Arabic countries, especially from Middle Eastern countries like UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, because the Taliban are influenced by these countries and they want to bring the same laws of these like Saudi Arabia or Qatar in the country. And they have had some of these like Middle Eastern countries have had hands in the destruction or in the destruction of our country. So basically, because the Taliban is like the Taliban, they even the Saudi Arabia or the other countries haven't recognized the government of the Taliban. And we haven't seen any negotiation with the Taliban so far, because they don't even care about the women of the country, because they do the same thing in their country with the woman. And now even like the Muslim countries, that they don't want to like speak with the Taliban to encourage them to give the woman's right, because as far as I know about the Quran, as far as I know about the Sharia, it allow women to go for employment, it allow women to go for the education. But basically, before we want the same government that they used to be in the Republican, like usually the Republican government. Of course, it was corrupt. Of course, it had a lot of mistakes. But this time, with the hope that there would be more reformation in the case of government, and there should be a strong and a stable government. And the government, like, if they bring a new government, the government needs to protect women. The government needs to follow the rule of law. And for somehow, I see like, yeah, because the Taliban government is influenced by Saudi Arabia and other Middle Eastern countries who restrict women, restrict the freedom of movement, restrict the expression of women, their identity, their freedoms. And we don't want these types of government who restrict women.
Well, the question is not whether you want or you don't want. The question is, I'm looking for a solution. Where the solution? Who can force, in fact, Taliban the government to change its way? That's the question today. I'm trying to think in terms of what are the possibilities of change. The pressure from the outside so far did not work. Obviously, it did not work. Perhaps more pressure needed to be put on the. But for example, look at the sanctions. The sanctions were very hurting to the Taliban, but they hurt the people more than the government. Because without the money coming, without the support, financial support coming from various countries, the people themselves are suffering a great deal more than the officials who are running the country. So we're looking for possibilities. What are the options? For example, like the reason I mentioned Saudi Arabia being the closest in terms of the practices of the Sharia laws, would the United States, for example, encourage the Saudis to do something about it, or the UAE for that matter, because they have a great deal of money, they can, you know, entice the Taliban. Look, if you do A, B, C, and D, surely you are absolutely right to suggest Saudis themselves are not exactly a liberated society, but are in relative terms, they are more liberated, the women in Saudi Arabia, only in relative terms, to the women in Afghanistan. So I'm looking in terms of what else can be done in terms of, because who is going to remove this government? The United States basically gave up. After 20 years, they realized that they could not change Afghanistan. The Soviet Union, after control of invading Afghanistan, and after 11 years, they basically left Afghanistan with their tail between their legs. They could not. Afghanistan, historically speaking, have really never been conquered. And any conqueror was able to stay in that country for too long. They will always end up being defeated in one form or another. So Afghanistan is something, historically speaking, it's unique in that sense. No conqueror was able to conquer it and keep it, historically speaking. And that's the United States has also learned this lesson in a very painful way. They cannot control Afghanistan, no matter what they have done. And even 20 years of liberalization, of democracy, of freedom, all of that, like you said, notwithstanding the terrible corruption that the government has had at the time. So where do we go from here? That is, you know, you're talking about, which you're absolutely right, change needs to happen. But I'm thinking in terms, how do we bring about the change? What is going to take? See, I deal with conflict resolution. And so, sure, everything you said is valid. And I'm trying to think with you, what can be done? Because it's easier said than done to say, the Taliban should be going away, Afghanistan should become a free, like it was the last 20 years, like before when the American was in control. But no one seemed to be willing to actually do something very significant enough to change the Taliban's direction. And my concern is that notwithstanding, surely, you know, what needs to be done, surely media ought to play a significant role. And that is, we need to make sure that the media, the foreign media, covers the plight of the Afghani women, cover the plight of the human rights issues, not just women, throughout Afghanistan. So the media kind of play a significant role. But the media in and of itself, in my view, will not be enough, albeit it is an extremely important tool. But the media probably will not be enough to change the rules in Afghanistan. But it would have some kind of effect. What other tools, what other means can we employ to make any kind of significant change to alleviate the human rights violation that's taking place in Afghanistan day in and day out?
Well, actually, as far as like my experience, because the West and the United States completely ignored the women of Afghanistan, so nowadays is not just like a hot topic. Nobody even cares about Afghanistan, especially in West and the United States, especially about the women of the country. And of course, it wouldn't be the solution to get rid of the government and to make Afghanistan like free again. But there should be a possibility that the United States and the America, or what we say the West, should bring the Taliban again on the table, and they need to negotiate with them. They need to negotiate with the Saudi Arabia and other Middle Eastern countries to convince the Taliban to change their decrees and rules, and especially to negotiate with those countries whose influence with the Taliban, especially like Pakistan, other Middle Eastern countries. And they should like seek for a solution, because nowadays international organization is the only hope for Afghan people, especially for women, because women is in a desperate situation now, and the people of Afghanistan, they cannot do anything at the time being. If they go into the public, if they could do demonstration, if they stand up and do rebellion, their families would be killed, they themselves might be killed. So there's no solution of people might stand that they should take some further steps to free themselves from the Taliban, because there's a high possibility that the Taliban would kill them, and the Taliban would definitely kill them.
Would definitely what?
The Taliban would definitely persecute those type of people who stand up against the government, who do like rebellion or who do protest against the government. And they did the same thing with the woman protesters in Kabul. There were some women who did some protests in the public places, and the Taliban actually actually arrested them for a few days, and then they asked their male guardians to come and to agree that they wouldn't protest in the streets again. So there's no possibility. Like now I can see the West and the international organization, they're waiting for the people of Afghanistan to do the rebellion or to just take a stand for themselves. They can, I cannot see the man who will take a stand for us. So our only hope is the West and the United States. Like in whatever way it's possible, I haven't seen any pressure from the West or from the international organization or from the United States for the people of Afghanistan. I think the sanctions are not only enough for the people of Afghanistan. They need to take action, like somehow to bring the woman again in the politics, to bring woman again in the society. And with the appearance of the Taliban itself, I cannot see any improvement. They are the people
Yeah.
of paleolithic ages. They don't even like wear, they don't even accept jeans. They don't even accept like man to wear a suit. How is this possible for them to govern the whole country? They are uneducated people. They come from the desert, from the mountains. They actually lived all their life in the madrasas or in the schools of the Pakistan. So how can I expect them to govern my country very well? How can I expect them to know about the climate change? How can I expect them to know about
Well,
the
of course,
technology?
that's going to be difficult. But again, you know, when you mentioned the United States withdrew from Afghanistan. President Obama withdrew very abruptly. There's no discussion in the United States about what's going on in Afghanistan. Hardly ever. You hardly ever see in newspaper, news media, any significant discussion about what's going on in Afghanistan. So again, you know, I go around just to find out, for example, to what extent the United Nations Commission on Women's Rights, have they been involved in trying to do something about that, about the situation in Afghanistan, from a United Nations perspective?
We have been involved very little because so far as I see, in the International Commission of the Human Rights or Women's Rights, especially in the United Nations, I have never seen them to bring the right people in the podium or to bring right people discuss about the women of Afghanistan. They have brought women from other countries to discuss about Afghan women, or they have brought like corrupt officials. They have brought those officials who didn't do anything for us, who never stand for Afghan women. They just fill up their pockets full of money, and they just did a lot of projects and earned a lot of money from the project, and they never did anything for the women of Afghanistan. If you bring a foreigner from other country to speak about the women of Afghanistan, how can that a foreigner can relate to our experience? There's a lot of activists who's ready to go and sit in the table to speak about, to actually represent the whole country woman in that table. Unfortunately, I haven't seen any West or international organization to do anything for the woman. So I have been following the news about the Afghan woman, and nowadays there's a conflict between many countries, especially the Ukraine, especially like Palestine and Gaza and the Israel conflict, which really affected us somehow because nowadays nobody is paying attention to Afghanistan. I can see that we are left behind. We are actually forgettable at this time, especially women, the people of Afghanistan. And of course, like there was the US withdrawal from Afghanistan. And this withdrawal was, it's unreasonable for us because there was a lot of progress in the 20 years. You cannot see how much Afghanistan developed in these 20 years. We had a lot of youths who went to Fulbright scholarship, who went abroad for university. And there was 20% of women who hold ministerial position in the parliament, in the politics, and even people mindset change. Now, with these dramatic change, these mindset would definitely affect. Now, it would take like 50 years, it would take 100 years to change the mindset of people because they had this Talibanism.
But you know, even 100 years cannot change anything unless something happened now, that is like some movement, some kind of specific steps taken. We, you know, mentioned this, like you see, I'm trying to focus on, if I want to write a piece on the subject, and to me, I need to provide solution. What is a solution? For example, I'll ask another question. Are there women in the United States, for example, Afghani women who are organized together and project some voice and say something needs to be done? Is there such an organization of women? Because I'm not aware of it. Are you aware of women or organization of Afghani women who managed to come to the United States like yourself, who can actually put a group like this and make their voice heard?
There are a lot of organizations in the United States which women get together, and they even invite women from Europe, Afghani women from Europe and from Australia or from other European countries to come and speak about their experiences, get together, raise the voices of Afghan women. There were some few protests also in the first days of like Taliban occupation in the US to raise the voices of Afghan women and raise the voices of Afghan people. And it's still like gathering or happening, but I can see these gatherings sometimes it's not effective. We do a lot of these types of gathering, but
well, it's not in and of
sometimes.
itself, see, in and of itself is not effective, but not effective enough. But I'm talking in terms of various things, you know, like, for example, organizations like this, how to prompt the United Nations to do something, how to prompt the Arab state to do something, how to prompt the United States to do something. We need to look in terms of every possibility together. So say one thing at a time, one at one work. If the United States alone won't work, the EU by themselves won't work. So you need a combination of various measures to be taken in order to have some kind of a significant effect. And this is really I'm looking for. If I want to say something tomorrow about the plan, the human rights violation of Afghanistan, and people will say to me, okay, what can you do about it? And so from this discussion, I'm trying to work with you to find out what can be in fact done about it to change, because what was, and the situation so far has not changed. It's getting worse, as a matter of fact, in Afghanistan. Again, there are some voices are saying, well, things will change. I don't see how, unless there is a concerted effort by many elements, many, like I mentioned several, and it's maybe there's some more we would like to think about, in order for us to effect the change. That's really the idea. Otherwise, you know, it will remain a pipe dream. What was 20 years, those 20 wonderful years have gone. The Taliban today is in power. Historically speaking, Afghanistan, nobody wants to conquer Afghanistan again. If Russia fell and the United States fell, who is going to go to Afghanistan and try to change the course of what's going on right now? That's not going to happen. So you're not going to have outside forces coming. There's got to be other means, other tools by which we can effect the change. And I'm trying to galvanize to see how many such tools we can put together and push as hard as possible in order to hopefully to make some kind of a change. That's really what I'm after, you know. So for example, you are outspoken and you are brilliantly, you have put this case for the Afghani women, human rights of women, better than anyone else that I've heard before. Are you right now either doing something? Are you trying, for example, organize Afghani women to as an organization? You are a writer, you can write. Do you have such a plan yourself to do something about it?
I had a plan to do something like that, but unfortunately, I need like some financial resources to do this thing. So now I'm just teaching girls in Afghanistan and I'm teaching them online, but I would definitely have the plan to get together all these Afghan women. So it was like a really great idea to collect all these Afghan women who had like the similar experience. So for the time being, I actually have attended events and conferences, but I actually agree with you, like historically many countries, many foreigners, they try to conquer Afghanistan, but they fail to conquer Afghanistan. But for the time being, we want, the only solution would be to provide advocacy opportunities for Afghan women to come and share their stories of struggles, their darkest experiences of the Taliban, to raise the voices of people, to represent Afghan women and the whole country. Another solution would be to provide educational aid for Afghan women. Maybe.
But the question is how? who's going to make that happen? That's my concern here. Of course, all of this need to happen. Education for women, better human rights, better job, better opportunities. All of that is necessary. And in fact, it will be good for the Taliban, of course, within certain limitations. We understand that. They believe in certain, they're very deeply, they follow Sharia laws to the T. In fact, their interpretation of the Sharia laws is one of the most strict that there is anywhere in the Muslim and the Arab world. So we know that. But again, the idea of change is so, it's necessary. And it's, again, I'm focusing on how do we affect it? How do we make it happen? How do we make it up? To me, this is the central issue. And it's one, just one thing. Me, social media important. It's got to be utilized in and of itself, not being enough. American pressure, sanction, European pressure, sanction, important, but that will not be enough. So we need to put a whole range of measures together and say, all of these need to be, and one of them, for example, organizing women, Afghani women, and so their voices will be heard, reaching out to the House, to the Senate, to the United Nations, speak, do something about it. That's what I think, and that is a possibility. I think it's possible. So I'm thinking with you in terms of, because I know you want change. I want to see change. And I want to think in terms of what personally I'd like to do something about it, and I would intend to do something about it. But again, I'm looking for even new ideas, obviously new ideas in terms of how to affect the change. So that's what I do, try to find solutions. That's what I try to do. And my conflict resolution. This is a conflict. It's a painful one. It has massive, horrifying human dimension. And to me, it is extraordinarily painful. So I want to, and I'm delighted we have had this conversation with you, because I think something obviously must be done, it should be done. And time is of the essence. We cannot wait another 10 years. 10 to 15 years from now, a whole generation will be lost in Afghanistan. Just imagine this. A whole generation of young women specifically would be lost. And that's a tragedy. And we cannot, I think the international community cannot afford that. But this also would have significant implication to the Taliban themselves. Because they're going to be, maybe this is the one they want to live, but they were able to live like this, say, 50, 100 years ago. It's fine. 50 years ago. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. The Taliban itself, it's a new phenomenon. But traditionally, the Afghanis were able to live any way they wanted to live. So, but time has changed, and they cannot be completely excluded from the practice of international community. So they need to be part of the what's going on internationally. They cannot avoid that. That's another element we need to focus on. They cannot complete. So no country today can live in total isolation. And so they need to be, and they need to understand that the international community has the capacity to make them feel totally isolated, if they choose to do so, and that the government will crumble under that kind of pressure. But we don't have the will. The international community today is so fragmented. They cannot get together and act on any. Look what's happening with the Ukraine today. Look what's happening with Gaza and Israel. There's no consensus. And Russia is doing what it wants to do. And Netanyahu in Israel is doing what he wants to do. And Erdogan of Turkey does what he wants to do. And there's no consensus to somebody to come tonight to stop them, to say enough is enough, we will no longer take it. Who is going to do that in Afghanistan? That's my concern. That is the issue. I'm struggling with trying to find ways and means by which we can advance the cause of Afghani women in particular. So, you know, if anything else you want to add, you know, I'd be delighted, because anything you're saying is very important. And we need to develop that, further develop it as best as we can in order to at least make a small contribution. And I'm not naive enough to suggest, okay, well, I can do this. Each of us need to make a small contribution, and the cumulative impact of this contribution will have eventually a significant result. So if anything else you would like to add to this?
want to say, like, to audience to do not forget Afghan women. And we have some organization as well here in Europe or here in United States who provide online classes and online education for Afghan women. I do the same thing. I provide online education for Afghan women inside the country. So if they see any post on social media, believe in this story, repost this story. And because women in Afghanistan, they cannot raise their voice. So people who is in abroad, they need to be the voices of Afghan women to do not forget and ignore the women of Afghanistan. I know there's a lot of conflicts happening in all over the world, but they shouldn't just only remember Afghan women. They should remember people from all over the world who is suffering, who have no access to women's rights, human rights, who have no access to food. And we need to support each other at these times of the conflict. As you said, sometimes like conflict resolution can be really difficult, especially for those people who is in charge of this. I know it's really hard, but we need to do something. We need to do a small contribution. And I won't give up on representing my people, representing my country woman. I would definitely continue my work, continue to help women in Afghanistan, be their voice, and kind of help them in any way possible. I would definitely keep in mind to gather some Afghan women. So I would definitely look at the resources or look at the funding, see if there would be any funding to organize these types of events and to gather all these Afghan women to do like some kind of like petition for the US government here to reach out to the Senate or Congress woman or man. But unfortunately, I don't have like a US citizenship. I'm an international student. Indeed, I don't have any home. I'm kind of like a homeless person in this world. I have no home back to my home. I have no home here in US. So I would definitely keep in mind to do the same thing, do some gathering, gather all the women, try to help Afghan women, try to seek out for the solution, try to speak with people, with the government officials, to do something for the people in Afghanistan. So because nobody would take action for us, just only us, just the people who got out of Afghanistan. And even the people who's inside Afghanistan, they cannot do anything. And I'm not sure, like, the man over there, they don't even stand for a woman over there. Especially, like, if you look at the Iran, the man actually support the woman. Both man and woman, they gather together, they do protests in the street. Even because of standing with their sister, some of them even got dead in Iran. Some of them even got like a kind of like they got even assassinated by the government. Especially like in Afghanistan, unfortunately, the man over there, very few men who support us, but the majority don't even support us.
Yeah. Anyway, I thank you so much. You know, I think it was a very enlightening, and you know, I feel very strongly. You know, I will do my share, my part, but I think. You might want to think in terms of exactly what we mentioned before, organizing group. This will be very helpful, I think. Again, in and of itself will not be enough. It's got to be many elements put together in order to affect the change. And I would like to stay in touch with you, and when we can, you know, I'll help you to the extent I can, and perhaps, you know, as I need more information, perhaps you can gather more information for me in order to be able to write about it, preach about it, talk about it, reach out to various, you know, officials to see what can be done. So thank you again for taking the time. And
it's an honor to participate at this podcast.
Thank you. So you take good care and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you for listening to this episode on The Issues. You can find this podcast on my SoundCloud page and stay tuned to my social media accounts for the latest analysis and announcements.